Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review. We are the Dudley Boys of What Culture. I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Michael Hanflut and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube.
Yeah.
Where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Collision, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0.
Oh!
Pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete. A quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hanflut and Sidgwick to review last night's Dynamite. It's trending in the right direction yet again, Sidge.
Trending in the right direction yet again is correct. This was not a trifecta Dynamite match angles promos, but you can't really, nor should you try and do a wild swing for an angle every single week. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'll lose all meaning. There was matches. There was promos and detail. There was one particularly sublime detail that I don't know if I'm reaching, bro. I'm fairly certain they did this on purpose. That was just cock a hoop with. It's like when they are on this form and dialed in and just trending in that direction, like don't waste a second. They do not waste a second to just get something in that's awesome. Like, there's that overflowing thought and passion, and I got it in this one, I think, visual gag.
It was a trifedka, because the matches had ramifications, the promos were good, and the crowd were hot. Like, really, really, like, I don't think it should go without mention.
AEW fans, doesn't matter.
Shouldn't go without mention that whilst AEW was, I think, absolutely deserved the criticism it got from Good Faith Corners, of which I believe we are one, in 2023, one of the key problems, of course, in any wrestling show is when there's either not that much of a crowd or a crowd that don't feel particularly connected to the show. And it wasn't, like, it just wasn't getting talked about enough. I think because numbers became the conversation when it came to AEW's crowds last year.
I don't think volume was that much of an issue.
Well, last year?
I don't think so.
I sensed a...
It wasn't the same.
Yeah, I think that was what it was. I sensed, like, there'd never been quite as obvious a disconnect between what AEW were producing.
Yeah, no,
and
I get that.
And I
but
just
let's
think,
not go on like they were 2019 Fed.
No, no, God, no, no. But already that feels addressed.
Yeah.
Like, as we kind of go through 2023, and I think there's, like, sorry, 2024, like, I think there'll be actual competition this year in, like, who's the Booker of the Year. And I think, like, you'll have two very, very good arguments from two different sides in WWE and AEW, like...
Well, three, sorry.
Excuse me. No, two, because there's two bookers and one cooker.
Okay, fair enough.
So he stands alone in that kitchen. But like...
I tried, Stitch.
I think
you didn't.
I think
tried to insert Sean into the conversation.
I think a great AEW is very clearly on the horizon, and wrestling's about momentum. Nothing's going to stop it. Like, we are going to be talking... I think this product, and it could be great for us selfishly, because I feel like this product is going to peak right around All In. It just feels like it's trending is the word, and wrestling typically... almost can't be stopped when things are going well. You suddenly are permitted to make some mistakes because the momentum at this point is too great and the snowball gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it just feels like that's happening with AEW every single... I don't think this Dynamite was as good as last week's, but I think I felt more excitement for it. You know, like, in the moment, I think, like, objectively, if you picked it apart segment by segment, it wouldn't stand up to last week's, but I think I just prefer the experience of it more because I like, for example, a Mercedes Moné already in the mix more than I do here. I just think there's so much to get more and more excited about.
Yeah. Backwards This Week wrote Ups and Downs this week. You can read it right now, whatculture.com. He also wrote a brilliant editorial yesterday about AEW. And it was really nice, genuinely, to see people sharing that yesterday and acknowledging, because we had a lot of crap last year, like, why are you being so negative towards AEW?
Why was AEW being so negative towards AEW? Also, you agree, the feeling's gone.
Yeah, this is the thing.
Also, like, you agree, the editorial.
I don't want to bang on about this, but like the reason we were the way we were last year
wasn't good enough.
It's so that we can be the way we are right now.
Yeah. I want to authentically feel it.
What's the article called if people want to check it out?
It's called It's Official, AEW Is Actually Back, and I firmly believe that it is. And AEW, they're not doing a Restore the Feeling marketing campaign, which is cynical, but they are substantiating it now. They're not doing Restore the Feeling if the feeling hadn't been lost. So, like, all those months where we were saying it's looking like it's over. This is not real.
Drain Bamager told me we were back when the Young Bucks and the Winnipeg Jets were feeding.
I'm sorry.
Great account.
I'm sorry.
Let's get into it then, because the show opened with all the big arrivals, and then who comes out to the ring to open the show but one Mercedes
Money.
I never know if we can play the full version on YouTube, whether we're going to get taken down by.
Definitely taken down. I don't know.
No.
They've kicked some ass.
We'll do our new version that we invented yesterday, shall we?
Money.
C-E-O.
Ah!
C-E-O.
Money.
She comes down, tells Toronto to say hello to their new CEO. She's been on such a high since last week of big business. She's missed all of this. She talks about, you know, nearly having it all taken away 10 months ago against Willow Nightingale.
You just did the NXT show thing for an AEW.
Stop talking about NXT.
That's what you did.
I can't help it. She throws to a video package, which is useful for me because I'm an idiot and I don't research anything, that of what's happened, what she's been up to over the years, not just in terms of wrestling, but red carpet, runways, doing New Japan, of course, and they show her getting injured and getting carried out of the match with Willow Nightingale, of course. She says she was kicking butt all over the world, but then it was taken away from her. Minor setbacks make for major comebacks, she said. Her mission is clear. She's not here to lead a women's evolution. She's here for a global revolution. She's here to face the best of AEW and the globe. She brings up Julia Hart and Sky Blue attacking Willow Nightingale last week. Messing with her unfinished business, and anyone does that ends up bankrupt, she said. That is the price you pay when you mess with Mercedes Moné, and the lights go out when they come back on. TBS champion Julia Hart's on the ramp. Sky Blue attempts to jump Mercedes from behind, but she gets taken out. Hart hits the ring. She almost gets hit with a moneymaker, but Blue saves her from that. And then they go under the ring and grab chairs, and suddenly, you know, numbers disadvantage. Mercedes looks like she's in trouble, but Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander run down to the ring with chairs of their own. There's a stare down, the lights go out, Blue and Hart disappear. Chris Statlander sort of nods at Mercedes, and it looks for a split second like Willow might chair shot Moné, but she turns around in time and Nightingale just drops the chair. Moné left saying she's got her eyes on Willow.
Can you just skip forward in your notes so we can cover off the other part of the Moné?
The backstage thing with Chris and...
You might as well just talk about it all at once.
Yeah, so later on in the show, after the swerve bit that we'll get to, Renee's there with Statlander and Stokely and Willow. Willow says she's usually all smiles, but tonight she's going to be now in more street fights than any other woman in AEW. You've got Statlander by her side and a weapon in hand, and she's going to be a completely different Willow. Yeah, Chris says tonight it'll be the end for Julia Hart and Sky Blue, which obviously happened on the Rampage immediately following Dynamite. Mercedes walks in. Statlander thanks her for having Willow's back last week, and she thanks Statlander for having hers tonight. They shake hands. Statlander leaves. Nightingale goes to talk, but Moné cuts her off and says, "You've done enough." Moné leaves, and Stokely has offered his hand, and she just walks away. And he sort of goes, "You did break her ankle," and then just sort of shrugs down the camera lens.
It's kind of hard for me to pin down my true feelings on this because, you know, things are nuanced, and I don't know where it's going. It's like we talk about it quite often. You're reviewing something that never ends, so it's hard to complete like a final thought on it. I don't think the angle was particularly great. Monet's sort of, I'm happy to be here. Here's some exposition on the screen. She's never been confused for this like world-class promo, but for now, it's authentic and she seems really, truly happy to be there. So I'm kind of happy to go along with it. It's a bit, the video package of her, you know, on the red carpet, they slightly embellished how good this New Japan run was, about how great she was, and then it was cut short. I mean, it was cut short, but uneven is the word. Yes.
She won a title, and that's kind of the big highlight of it all.
Yeah, in terms of match quality and drawing ability.
Lie, though. I'm off.
I gotta lie.
Yeah, tell him it was class anyway.
It wasn't too insulting to the intelligence, so you might as well do this. I mean, you can't not realistically. I've got a slight bit of anxiety, and Mercedes Moné is tremendously over right now, but is there danger of the Soraya effect? Will people accept Willow Nightingale very readily as a heel purely because Mercedes Moné looks like she's going to be playing the babyface opposite? Is it a misread on the part of Mercedes Moné and Peppermint and maybe Tony Khan, who's obviously sort of saying, do what you need to do with this or what you'd like to do with this. So I don't know. I don't feel prepared to boo Willow Nightingale. She's simply too likable. I'm in let her play out mode and I'm not enjoying it, but it doesn't feel like the hottest thing in the world either.
I've got
one more point to make. And I think it's one Michael Hamflett will very much agree with. Between Ospreay getting a live promo every single week, if not a big sort of match, and Moné opening the show on two consecutive weeks. As long as you've got some spark and verve on your show elsewhere, and luckily AEW does, you need this framework, you need this platform, you need focus and profile on your pushed stars. It can get a bit samey, repetitive, dull, whatever, as long as the whole show isn't that, Monday Night Raw. You need that bedrock of pay attention to this person, this star, this performer. They are fundamentally important. You are meant to invest in them. I've kind of had this, not epiphany, but this realization that it kind of needs to be a little bit boring or repetitive or formulaic to get past the problem last year of who do I invest in? Who's going to be in the main event of a pay-per-view in the next 2 or 3 months' time? Who is the fulcrum of this division or this scene? You need some of this and we're getting it.
Boring and formulaic. You better believe Mike Lamflett agrees. Like, especially in the monthly pay-per-view cycle. That's kind of how it happened in the first place. If they're going to, it's effectively monthly, isn't it, at this point? If they're going to have that cycle, then ultimately, you can book the show like AEW used to, because there's always going to be that destination, like beyond a television special, there's always going to be that big show coming up. And you're asking, it's not a Dynamite main event, you're asking for $50 each time. So I think it starts to insult your paying customer if you don't, and it's just, it's bad business. So I like the way that shows are structured like this anyway. I do want the smaller, more overcast than the like broader net of any wrestlers can come and work here. Can you give us the top 10? Like, your rankings don't, so can you just, like, can I infer who the top 10 best ones are, please? And I think this structure definitely helps that. I have two conflicting thoughts on this. It's really funny that Sid mentioned Soraya for a completely different reason to me. I thought of Soraya on this one as well. And negative first, because then I want to get to the positive. They have to be careful because of an unfortunate precedent that was set by Soraya's arrival. When we all know what Mercedes Moné is getting at with the global revolution. She's, of course, wanting to build from what she did in WWE, but also talk about how there's going to be matches potentially folding in Stardom. We're going to have a much wider Forbidden Door net cast this year, so that's potentially very exciting. She's probably reflecting a bit of her own personal ambition that involves what AEW can do with its wider net. Nothing wrong in that, but if you recall when Soraya came in, there was this immediate sense of, right, I'm going to make this proper now. That awful segment where she lined them all up. Tony Storm, of all people, didn't even really want to be acknowledged by her because she was like, I know how this looks. I can visualize this. It looks terrible. And I just think you have to be careful with using that kind of language and framing of a new character because of that happening once upon a time. It's absolutely have this like massive star come into the division and say, I'm the biggest star and I'm going to clean up and I'm going to win all the belts and win all the titles. Because in a way, every wrestler should think that and nobody should buy it more than Mercedes Moné. But just be careful about almost coming in and sort of saying it too much, because I just think already you would other yourself a little bit from the division and present yourself as being the person here to save. It happened in WWE for years with the Intercontinental title, you know, and we just mocked that relentlessly with good cause. Just be careful with that one, because I think you stand a chance of accidentally doing it. I don't think that's anybody's intent here, but I just think people remember that. However, love the rest of it. Like, this wasn't... I like her opening the show, because that spot does matter. It has always mattered. And, like, on television and on pay-per-views, if you're on first, it's the second best position than being on last. And it just stresses your importance. And by stressing her importance, it makes TBS title stuff something nobody fantasy booked. Everybody was going straight to Toni Storm. It's making TBS title stuff feel elevated as a result. This is woman making the belt stuff, but I actually think it will work. And I like seeing this. I got the same... It's funny, all the comparisons last week with Mercedes Moné and CM Punk's debut. I got the same feeling this week when she was truly in the mix. You know, like the beatdown happens, then she gets saved, then you've got the promo later on. It's like she's just interacting. Was it
Darby Allin and no, it was Daniel Garcia and 2.0.
Yeah, it was 2.0 and Daniel Garcia getting the first shot in on Punk when he ran in to save Darby Allin. I got that exact same emotion. I was like, they're in it. They're just in it wrestling with the wrestlers. They live here now. It was such a cool feeling. And I got that this week from her, which I think is important, because you can only get so many weeks, as Sidge points out, of the great to be here. What are you actually doing here?
Yeah.
I know that already. I've had that answered in week two. Like, and I think that's, if you're making a little plan to roll out, you get to Dynasty, you strap her up as a TBS champion. I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty content with Monet already as part of the furniture. The Canadian Maple Leaf theme gear was inspired as well. I think she got that just right.
Marvez is backstage. He wants to try and get a word with Kazuchika Okada and the Young Bucks. They approve of the respect that Marvez put on Okada's name, but next time he should do it in Japanese. Matthew Jackson talks about how handsome Okada is and how if anyone rises to the occasion, it is Kazuchika Okada.
Correct.
Under continental rules, they can't be at ringside tonight, but they'll be behind the curtain, giving him the best replays. Okada talks in Japanese, tells Eddie basically he's coming for his title, and then Matthew called Marvez a dumbass for not knowing what Okada said in Japanese and told him to study up. So that doesn't happen again next week. They're a bunch of arseholes, aren't they?
Yeah, but, you know, he's crushing it on Duolingo. Oh, I just love it. I absolutely goddamn love it. Like, they have completely nailed to the wall how to present a native Japanese speaker on national television in the United States. It's like they've subverted the idea of, oh, they can't talk, you know, particularly fluently at length on national television in America. No, Marvez, you should be speaking Japanese. So what a great little twist. Marvez is already the most valuable he's ever been in this promotion. He should attempt to speak Japanese next week. Like the most noble failure, where he's just spent in fear of Okada the preceding 7 days just studying up on this like really difficult language to learn, trying his best, failing as he's going to do within 7 days. Maybe he should get struck by the Rainmaker. I just completely love this.
Exposition is good, actually. Imagine that.
When done right.
I had completely forgotten about the no interference rule extending from the Continental Classic that belt is wrapped up in. What a fantastic thing to just make explicitly clear now, when you've got the best heel act, they're cheats, they're like nasty to Alex Marvez, they're absolutely going to play the numbers game when they're permitted to, but now we're going to see Kazuchika Okada never having the help. So you get both, they're having the cake and eating it too. They're going to be cheating bastards whenever they're allowed. And Okada's going to win clean in these title matches 100% of the time.
95% clean. He did rake Kingston's eyes here.
Well, but like,
I mean, he's definitively the best.
Single-handedly, he's always going to have to get this done. And then, like, the one time there's a transgression, who's the one breaking the rules? The people that can change the rules.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a nice thing to remind you of ahead of him winning the belt, because then you can immediately think of all the things that are still to come.
And then we got the Continental title match, Eddie Kingston versus Kazuchika Okada. They go back and forth. Kingston's all fired up for this, of course. And he actually wins the exchange with Okada early on. He hits him with a lariat. Okada bails outside. Kingston goes after him, but Okada suckers him in as he goes back into the ring. They trade shoulder blocks. Okada goes to the floor. And this time he drops Kingston with a DDT.
And then he does this facial expression. just pleased with his work. Just a massive smile on his face, pleased with his work.
And then we see just how pleased.
Was this match? Sorry.
It's all right.
structured entirely to say, yeah, your performance center's pointless. Was that like the main thing? Because it worked on that basis.
What, the fact that you could just find the hard camera with a smile?
And then just like play to every other camera at ringside.
Aye. And they cut to Matthew and Nicholas, who are backstage with Tony Khan, making sure we get the right instant replays. Okada back inside, laughing and mocking Kingston. Dropkick takes us to a break.
And then he got the hang, you've missed the instant replay.
Yes.
So they are cut backstage to them in Gorilla with Tony Khan, who wonderfully just looks gormless.
How did he get there?
And then Nicholas and Matthew, to use their God-given names on their passport, the Young Bucks, are on the headset, like crushing it and all the rest of it. They do the instant replay, and it's the back of a Carter's head that you see doing the DDT, and the camera just goes towards the floor. They've done that on purpose, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Unbelievable stuff, because I love the idea. They've already nailed, sorry, you'll get to the recap.
It's all right.
They've already nailed that awful cadence of the middle manager figure. Do you like money? Because we hooked them up with Barry Bloom. Like, they're just arseholes. They've got that horrible, the ticks, the cadence. And now they've got that delusion of a middle management figure who deems themselves capable of, I can do everything and I'm better than you. And like, the heat is, that was the worst instant replay of all time.
Yes.
And that's what I was talking about with that. Just that 1 second, if it's the picture of beer materializing from Hangman Page, if it's Joe just going, I can be a dick here, kick the security guard off the ramp, or just the worst instant replay you've ever seen.
The cameraman doing a bad job because it's Don Callis.
That's the way it's like,
why have I been given that tell for 2.5 minutes later to go, oh God, that's why.
Yeah. Just unbelievable. I just love how when they are on this form, they'll never, like, miss a second to do something cool. It's just like they're jamming with this. You know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
They are just completely on point. They are like, the analogy is, they are just like, they're knocking out B-sides. It's like, you know, if you just save those B-sides, record them, by all means, don't release them. And then when your career peaks in 3 years, just pretend it's a studio album you've been making all along and give yourself another 18-month critically acclaimed tour run, Oasis.
A bit master plan, wasn't
it? Yeah. It's what they should have done.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a good album.
That's the thing. Sorry, I know this is a complete detour, right? If I was like in music and I was like a management figure and you had like a band in that kind of form, and that's what the Young Bucks are in right now, and it's like Oasis doing the master plan or like whatever, guided by voices, Pollard writes too many songs for his own good. Right, you know those B-sides that are just incredible? Why don't you just save that, right? Just record something in half an hour. It'll probably be really good as well. Those B-sides, just pretend you've never recorded them. And then for the difficult third or fourth album, just do that.
Fire them out.
It's no extra work. And you're capturing your peak form and you're pretending that it's later on.
Mike Sidgwick compares Matthew and Nicholas to Liam and Noel. My content brain there.
Yeah.
I think they've get them in the Young Bucks gear.
I think the Bucks are far better than Oasis. I think Oasis is one of the overrated bands.
You've got the Beatles double A side era as well. The amount of singles that were just double A side, like, and this is the best back catalog of all time. You're knocking out two at a time.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kingston fires back with a suplex, machine gun chops in the corner, snap German suplex, that sliding forearm of his gets two. He goes for a big home run shot, but Okada hits him with that beautiful drop kick of his. He gets an air raid crash as well, but Kingston kicks out. Okada rolled through a top rope elbow attempt, but gets hit with a Kingston spinning back with an hurricane from out of nowhere, but Kingston can't follow up to get the pin quickly enough. Kingston fires back with a clothesline, takes down the straps, but Okada takes the referee, eye-rakes Kingston. Kingston still is in it. He gets an enziguri, misses the back fist, though. Okada hits the landslide, Rainmaker. 1-2-3, he is your new Continental Champion. We cut backstage. The Young Bucks are yucking it up, high-fiving, celebrating. And then the pyro goes off, which clearly Okada was not told about, because I think he thought for a split second that was his cue for Pac coming out, because he went, oh yeah, and then Pac comes out to make his intentions known.
One very minor complaint: there was no pressing need to do the Pac thing. That could have waited until Collision, until next week's Dynamite, whatever.
Triggy NXT standing on the ramp anger there when Pat came out. It was like
I was only annoyed by the NXT feuds being made on the ramp because there was nothing else to them.
Yeah,
yes. Everything else to this Young Buck stuff that wouldn't annoyed me. No, I needed a good 2 minutes of this god who is magnetic to gold has arrived as he was always going to, bask in his glory sort of thing. I needed that gloating, that celebration, more of Okada's wonderful face, which is just exceptional throughout here. What's the rush? Frame this as a proper champion celebration. It just felt like that weird, incessant need to rush that Tony Khan, that energy that's sometimes too much on Dynamite. They should have had a nice 2 minutes of, I'm here, get used to it, I'm Okada. I just didn't need, I'll be great if this happened. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Do you agree?
I do, yeah. It didn't bother me in the moment, but that's fair. Yeah. It's
just the rush.
It's very typical of AEW, yeah. And it shouldn't be. It's so rare.
Christopher Daniels as a tag. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
That's their most TNA to the back moment. Yeah. And a lot of them aren't as bad as that, but you almost forget what fun you could have just with a moment.
I just want his face. Yeah. I just wanted to see Okada's brilliant face because Okada's brilliant face was the highlight of the match. We've talked about that DDT on the outside and him just appreciating his handiwork. Mm-hmm. And what, like, he's a cocky, arrogant prick, but there's also like a bit of a sociopath within this Okada character as well. I would describe this match as good, very good in places, but exactly the match it needed to be. And more so than a match in the action, it was the perfect vehicle with which to launch Kazuchika Okada on US TV in AEW. I think part of the problem with the action, which I don't think this match hit its ceiling in and of itself personally, is that Okada's slow burn rhythm, like, sort of was jarring against the expectations of the first match you see on a TV show. It was just done quite slowly, as you would expect. Maybe it would have played a little bit better had there'd be a hot opener first. I don't know, but I just think fans are bang up for the first match. And when it takes its time to unfold, yeah, maybe that accounted for what at times felt like a tiny bit of a flat atmosphere. And as well, and I'm going to be generous about this, I don't know the correct take, but there was something notable that Eddie Kingston has been way more fired up in other matches, right? And I'm thinking, is he a little bit upset about losing this one? Or maybe my generous interpretation is, I think he did a really good and selfless job here of just giving Okada pretty much the entire match, with the idea being that he's not lost because of his own temperament and he's not sort of been really instinctive and fired up. He's just been beaten. He's just been outclassed. And the way I put it in Ups and Downs, don't read it, you can, it's a transcript of this, is that he wore Kawada's colours. By the way, those baggy pants were distracting, which probably didn't help either. I don't think he himself felt that comfortable in them. He was like lifting his waist up. I just think he probably realised after he stepped through the curtain, what have I done? But he wore Kawada's colours as he does, but he ended an almost Misawa-like performance here where I think he was trying to maintain his composure, and that was like sort of articulated with the condescending... You should have flinched, man.
Me?
Not hard, obviously. I'm not a tough guy. For the audio listeners, I've just tried to do the Okada rear back. Slap, yeah. Slap, slap. Kingston was just maybe like pointedly was like, nah, you're not getting me with that. Let's have the match. And he just got beat.
Yeah. I would flinch on other podcasts, but I know you're not going to strike me on an AEW pod. But if it was NXT, I would have shoot flinch.
Good. another aspect of this match, again, Okada's face. It's like he didn't do NXT face when some of the moves like didn't win. He was almost registering like quite disgust with himself. I should be putting him away by now. Like, his face was absolutely magnificent throughout.
It did. I don't want to mention him, obviously, but did give me a brief flashback to Vince at Mania when the pyro went off and he was himself for like Theory's music when
he was waiting for Austin, wasn't he? Yeah. Sold for the wrong Austin. I'm going to be higher on the match than Sid was. I'll be the one bold and brave enough to say it. Eddie Kingston's quite good. There he is. I think he's my favourite wrestler in AEW at the moment, and I think part of that is because I'm falling for Eddie Kingston because he's starting to fall down again. And I think I thought this was an absolutely selfless performance,
yeah,
when the booking requested it as well. I don't think there are many wrestlers that would have been able to give quite as much pathos to this defeat as Eddie Kingston. He was, so it ties up to the whole Continental Crown no interference deal, where you have got this moneyed, cheating arsehole that also has to be the best wrestler at the same time. that's quite hard. Okada can do it in this setting, and what a way to start. He was just comfortably out-wrestled. Not many people out-fight Eddie Kingston, but Eddie Kingston didn't get a chance to fight in the first place for Okada to out-fight him. He was beaten by the substantially better man. In the Wins and Losses Matter promotion, which AEW was returning to beating, they've just made the rematch even hotter than this first match because Kingston needs to start again. Kingston needs to completely, if he's ever going to give Okada another match and give him a challenge, he's got to completely rethink how he gets it done. And I loved watching how defeated he was throughout. I don't know if I've started to just get too used to Eddie Kingston being happy. For the longest time, it was all about, look, I just want Ruthie to get a belt. Yeah. It's like, she's had three now. Mm. Maybe I need the misery to come back into his life. And getting that here was great to watch as a Kingston fan, seeing him just be beaten bit by bit by bit. But it was fantastic booking of the Okada character because he's the real deal.
A great vehicle for
it. There's like, at the moment, you have to be careful with the Okada match quality because they risk making him too much of a like-for-like with Will Ospreay. Like, if you give everybody that very delicate build and then go into that final third, they're going to see, like, they're going to feel the excitement that you get from the bulk of an Ospreay match. And I think you don't want that. I think you want to take them off in two different directions.
There was no reversal blitz here, was
there? Not at all. This was a very calculated. Mm. He's the best because he can dominate and beat you with relative ease. And Ospreay's not wrestling like that at the moment. So you've got multiple ways to have a best wrestler in the world. Mm. And I think the agent into that was very important. And it required Kingston to be as selfless as he was. I expect him to go on and lose his next belt to Mark Briscoe. I don't know what happens with the New Japan Strong belt. But
No one cares.
But you could well see him losing that as well, yeah, as part of this. I think Kingston's character needs this. Maybe in Brian...
It's a bit soon after beating Danielson.
Well, no, but maybe not, because I was just going to say, like, Danielson's now about to fight Ospreay, and that gets Danielson immediately back to, right, I get back on Ospreay's level, and maybe Kingston, in just once achieving the nirvana of beating Brian Danielson, I've got nothing left. And he really hasn't, and it's time to go back to basics. It's time to find the anger again, all that kind of thing. Kingston was a perfect man for what I thought was just a perfectly agented TV match. Really, really strong, I thought this was.
Yeah, great meme posted on X by Bozzy, you might have seen doing the rounds. You know, normally it's like, this such and such happens, and then this happens, and then such and such happens, and then, oh God, you're back to the beginning.
The Jericho verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just suffering builds character in every single one. Renee Baguette's backstage with Swerve and Prince Nana.
Renee on the ramp, by the way.
Oh, that was great.
Oh, yes.
And then backstage with the Ferrari doing the intro, me and Sid were talking about in the office, intros and stuff. They're there every week, but it feels big time when you're watching if they're going to have a big time match.
So weird. Like, I'm so easily pleased. I tried to put on this facade of a discerning guy.
Yeah.
Kazuchika Okada's in a red Ferrari. Hey, do you like stars? Because he's going to turn up in a Ferrari is why he's a star. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Change the spelling of a surname to Okada, C-A-R.
Don't do that.
Beep, beep, it's Okada. Yeah, get rid of the coin flip. Beep, beep. Thanks, Nicholas. Write this down, Tony. Get yourself a wrestling show.
Swerve said last week his intentions to attack Samoa Joe with the chain and what have you were due to Joe trying to embarrass him the previous week. He's still got the steel chain there. He says he doesn't have a problem choking people out either.
My eye's actually killing us.
He felt inspired. He loved being in Toronto. He felt inspired by Mike Tyson training for his next fight. He wants a fight of his own, so he issues an open challenge.
Yep. I will say, impromptu adjacent, Tony Khan in my head canon had enough time to think, have we got time for this? And then approves it.
Yeah.
Without going, that'd be great.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home.
To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Then we got the Chris Statlander, Stokely, Willow, Mercedes thing. And then we got Hook versus Chris Jericho. The bell sounds. Hook immediately hits an overhead suplex, and Jericho looks like he might not be able to get up after that. The referee checks on him. Jericho's like, I'm fine. So Hook then immediately jumps on him and nails him with strikes. Hits another T-bone suplex for a two count. Went to charge in the corner. Jericho just punched him. Hook responded by hitting multiple German suplexes. Third one looked like he landed Jericho right on his head to take him to the break.
That was the second of two, not even references, like direct callbacks to the match from the big ass extreme bash. Like people have already done the side-by-sides online. They're there on purpose. Jericho's got a good memory for it. It's a nice thing to do. Oh, you did learn, and then 30 years passed and you forgot.
Yeah.
And now the sun's kicking your ass, same way your dad did.
He finally counter one, did Jericho after the break. Tries for the walls of Jericho. Hook fights out of that. Jericho goes up top for an axe handle, but leaps right into another suplex. Hook,
really good bump for Jericho, you know.
Mm.
But we've got to be fair is fair.
Yeah. Mm.
An awesome bump in a really good spot.
Hook goes for a big lariat, runs into a big boot and a lion salt for two. Jericho tries an overhead throw when they get to their feet, and Hook lands on his face, basically. Jericho goes to the corner to deliver punches. Hook counters into Red Rum. He drags Jericho to the mat. Jericho just managed to escape. Hook counters the walls of Jericho, though, gets an inside cradle. Flash pin, 1, 2, 3. And Taz mentioned this is Hook's first pinfall victory in AEW. A big one at that. And Jericho shows that Hook has earned his respect with a fist bump afterwards.
Can I just shock you?
Go on.
I didn't think this was bad at all. Some of the bumps didn't look that good. And, you know, when you're doing the Lesnar match, and the worst thing is you can kind of hear Chris Jericho in the back say, hey, we should do SummerSlam. What year was it, though? Cena. That you can hear him say it. But then the parallels of the big-ass Extreme Bash existed as well. I thought that spot that we've highlighted where he'd done the belly-to-belly from the axe handle was a really, like, a good athletic physical feat from Jericho. In the second phase of the match, I thought was really quite clever because the stated aim they've been telling you in this story is that for whatever reason, Chris Jericho wants to see if Hook is a future world champion. So what you got here was a match that I think existed to showcase that there are different dimensions to Hook. Yes, he is this raw, athletic, force of nature, who's really cool at suplexes and has got a really strong pain threshold and could do some really, really cool things. But then the back half of the match existed so that Hook can outwit and flash pin a veteran who knows every dark art. I think this match existed, the body of it, to just show you, oh, it's a different dimension to Hook. He doesn't just beat you with his like raw athletic talents. He's got a brain in his head as well. And I think that's the intentional layout. Oh, he's got more to his game than he might have thought. He's just beaten Jericho. He could be a future world champion. And in a way, I thought they kind of took the piss but got away with it as well because I didn't ask for this. And I still think Hook should have gone on excursion yesterday. And yet, I thought this was a pretty good match and a really clever, well-thought-out story.
Yeah, it's weird this. Like, Jericho at this point, hasn't got enough credit in the bank about putting guys over.
Yeah.
His selling was pretty tremendous in this match, I thought.
Well, this is it. So, like, long term, I can't allow myself to think anything because we've had so many of these conversations where either chapter one or chapter 1.5 of the Chris Jericho is working with X stuff. It's pretty good. And then it all starts to unravel. And then 6 months later, you're sick of everybody and the guy that's supposed to get over has gone under. So I like this match. I just enjoyed this match in spite of myself. I thought Jericho bumped as well as he possibly could be expected to at his age.
And he sold. I think he's selling.
I don't mean that in a cruel way. Like
I said to Sid earlier on, it looked like Hook was trying to move a wardrobe at points.
Yeah, he's...
Get over here, you bugger!
He's 50-odd, and then the assignment tonight is you're going to get dropped on your head.
Yeah.
Like, I can't fault the physical aspect of this, and I enjoyed the match. I just feel like that's where I'm going to park my enjoyment, because history has shown us more often than not in AEW, there's good examples, but there's more bad with Chris Jericho, that this will get worse.
He's got a proposition for him next week.
Exactly. From here, it gets worse. Now, is the proposition Lion Hook full time and then Jericho turns? Don't care, because I've seen probably the best version of the match. Hook's in a good space. I am like Bernie Sanders. I'm yet again asking for Chris Jericho to go away. But here, he could go away having got a bit of praise rather than loads of criticism. That's like, I just enjoyed this on the night.
Yeah,
and Chris Jericho never stops.
Not to tread on our own dick with a preview next week, but is your ideal situation with a proposition? Should me and you go on excursion?
Yes, go to New Japan.
And win the World Tag League.
I just think that there's an obvious distaste for Chris Jericho. Mm-hmm. It is fully justified, but I like to think that I judge things on merit individually, and I thought you had a good night here.
Yeah, agree.
Next up is Tam Star, Tam Nan, Cole Bay Bay. I don't know why he's doing the low head wobble. Adam Cole said he hated feeling disappointed last week. Wardlow disappointed him in failing to defeat Samoa Joe. He said, you should be AEW World Champion, but you couldn't get the job done. So now Wardlow's job is to ensure the Undisputed Kingdom keeps the gold they already have. Maybe then they'll forgive him. Cole's doing this because he cares about Wardlow and wants him to reach his full potential, so don't screw this up.
Adam Cole felt more of an imposition than Chris Jericho on the show. And I don't know how that's possible, because I actually really like Adam Cole as a human being, parasocially, as far as you can tell. Yep, just forget this exists.
I said it last week with a match, and I felt it in the segment. There is an air of sadness around Wardlow that I cannot shake. I feel sad watching him wrestle at this point, knowing that failure is right around the corner. I feel sad now that he's once again back in the eye rolling while his mouthy boss calls the shots. Like,
you talk about cyclical stuff. That is Wardlow's entire career in AEW.
He's in a loop from which there is no escape.
We talked about
getting over.
We talked about letting the MJF come back, go a few more months yet, and potentially you have him and Cole maybe at Wembley, maybe in the comebacks then. But the prospect now that when that happens, they've been doing so much of this, they're like, oh, it's MJF here, like Adam Cole. But which side is Wardlow on? It's like, oh no.
It's just a character and a medium. The Wardlow character and the weekly never ends episodic TV, they do not fit together. They just don't.
A bit of 2023 AEW here as well. Strong wins that belt against Orange Cassidy. And like, then what? Orange Cassidy's moving to the tag tournament and back to winning ways. And like, that belt goes invisible a bit for again until we'll get like a random...
Do stuff on Collision.
Yeah, fair enough, I suppose. But like, I feel like...
Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, I guess that title's fell below TNT again.
It has, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
there's a direction, it's just not a good one.
Yeah.
Or a hot one.
Then Tony Schiavone brings out Will Ospreay to a huge pap in Toronto. And he says, last time he was there, he was a little bit naughty at Forbidden Door. He apologised for what he did back then. He says he was here to deliver some elite caliber wrestling, but in return he wants some Canadian maple syrup, bruv. He put over Brian Danielson.
Got away with it.
So over, man.
It's ridiculous.
Bruv is like, I know within 2-3 years, bruv's going to be like, your distaste for what for me? I hate it, but it's so over. Go with it all the way. Slap it on every t-shirt you can. I never want to hear it again.
He puts over Danielson versus Shibata. Says that's what professional wrestling truly is. Just wishes it had been announced earlier so we could do it on the preview. Anyway, Ospreay brings up how he couldn't fit in Danielson's shoes when he was in Japan because they were too small, bruv. What you did in Japan was great, but... Ospreay elevated pro wrestling. He said he won the Best of the Super Juniors twice. He won the junior title 3 times, the never open weight, the IWGP world title. He'll prove he can walk in Danielson's shoes in AEW. And he brings up Shibata saying, long time no see. He said 7 years ago, he beat the piss out of him. Now he's 30 years old. He's got 2 pugs, 3 cats, a kid, a missus, a mortgage to pay for, and a point to prove. Next week on Dynamite, he challenges Shibata and tells Danielson to sit at home and watch how a real what a real Billy Goat is all about. Sage, I've got a question for you regarding this. Is this one of the final faults that AEW's fixed here?
Yes, absolutely. And we'll go into that imminently. Mm-hmm. I just want to talk about the Will Ospreay promo first before we get to the fact that, yes, AEW has potentially remedied the one thing that plagued it throughout the glory years, the seminal peak, the, you know, the not particularly good period last year, the shadow cast over it in 2022. This Will Ospreay promo was excellent. Excellent. And we are within 2 weeks of him cutting promos on national television. The caveat needs to go away. Oh, Will Ospreay. His tone. Oh, Will Ospreay. He's cutting great promos for him.
Yeah.
He's just a great promo. Yeah. Like, the rhythm, cadence, when to raise the voice, when to make the point, how to make the point, the killer line, how to tell the story, how to really peck at someone's psyche. He's incredible at this. It's not just, oh, Will Ospreay surprising me by how good he is. It's no longer even, Will Ospreay is surprising me by how great he is. Get rid of that tone and that caveat. Mm-hmm. He's great at this, and this was great. Like, I love that bit where the whole idea is you've got two alpha males who believe themselves to be the absolute very best at this, and it works because two of them are. Like, it's either him or Ospreay, Danielson or Ospreay, in terms of the best in the world for me. I lean towards one. And they are having this, well, we're going to have to sort it out once and for all. And it's not, it's gone for that respectful. I obviously respect you enough to consider you the best in the world. Wouldn't it be nice? We kind of need to prove it to ourselves. It's getting a little bit spicy. It's getting a little bit nasty now. And they are, like, sequencing it and pacing it perfectly. The idea being, in order to do this, I'm going to drop you on your head, which has been broken quite a few times. Sorry, I'm not going to get killed like you are. So it's already heightened in terms of the distress and the emotion. Now it's getting a bit spicy. Will Ospreay struck upon something that people have said, but the great Danielson, who people are understandably reverent towards, they haven't really said it that often, but remember when he was in WWE? He's like, oh, I'd love to go to CMLL and work this guy. After a while, for me, it was like, shut up. Please, you're just saying things that I think you want people to hear. And Ospreay has found the one thing that you can kind of criticize Danielson for. Oh, you want to be this great in Japan? Never went, really. You went early in your career, but where were you after that? I lived it. I did it. You didn't. My feet are bigger than yours. Like, how's that a good insult? And yet, it's really cutting. It's really going to nail.
Of course, the implication as well. If his feet are bigger than him.
Yeah, he's a huge cack.
Yeah.
Indeed. One more thing on this promo. That was tremendous. So, you've got these two alphas in a dick measuring contest.
Love this line. You tweeted this, didn't
you? Yeah. Two alphas in a dick measuring contest, and they've been clever enough to use Shibata as the ruler. What a great idea for a subplot that is. And I've got a fantasy book and stuff. We'll save that for the preview next week, wherever you get your podcasts from. But they're doing Ospreay versus Shibata.
Oh my God.
Having just done Shibata versus Danielson.
Oh my God.
Ahead of Danielson versus Ospreay at Dynasty.
Oh my God.
Since day one. They've always wanted, and it was a clever tactic at first, the idea being, right, we're going to do, this is AEW 2019, we're going to do stable-oriented storytelling, like New Japan, Dragon Gate, Crockett, all the rest of it, how it should have been all along, basically, right? The idea being that the top star of one stable can have a match on television against an underling of their rival stable, hence why you got something like Hangman Page versus Sammy Guevara. As an example, the idea being they didn't have a rights fee in 2019, so and they understood the art of promotion very early. Saved the big ones for pay-per-view, which was a medium thought dead. It's been a huge achievement that they've been able to generate as many buys as they have over the years. So they've thought, right, well, we have to preserve the big matches. We might not get the rights fee. We have to work towards the right fee. right, Faye, we have to gruel this audience with the idea being that they'll stick with us, keep watching, they'll be rewarded with the big matches. And he got about half of them. And then this just was drilled into Tony Khan's head, this fear of, well, if I give everything away, what if I've got nothing left? Michael Hamflett has got a particularly big bugbear about the certain match that he lost out on.
Mm-hmm. It's back now, though.
It's back now. But yeah. This is the point.
Yeah.
To Tony Khan's ultimate detriment, Cody Rhodes versus CM Punk is going to happen, and it's going to happen in WWE. How's that happened? Bryan Danielson still hasn't wrestled Darby Allin. Kenny Omega hasn't wrestled Darby Allin. That's my ultimate.
That's wild.
You know, this has been a problem for a long, long time. And then if you look at that history of Dynamite main events, there's some like seminal, just incomparable professional wrestling, what, every other week or once in every 3 weeks. And yet you'll still get, that main evented that, or that main evented that, or he's main eventing, or she's main eventing that. They've kind of taken the pace and lost a lot of great matches. But now, you're getting Ospreay versus Danielson at Dynasty. You're getting these great subplots building towards that match at Dynasty. All In already feels massive, and we don't know the matches yet. This increased pay-per-view schedule, which they didn't want to do at first because they wanted to create these huge, huge destination events, which I get the theory behind. I'll let Hamflett talk imminently, I'm sorry, is that as much as that was a great idea, one pay-per-view every 3 months, how massive is this going to feel? And it did.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the time, what you had was a two-pronged problem there in that everyone remembers, oh, it's like 2 or 3 weeks where nothing's happening on Dynamite. There's table setting and there's RC in 3 or 4 weeks or whatever. I mean, I was a mark and I loved it all, but I could understand the complaints during peak AEW of, oh, there's nothing happening for these few weeks. And then, because you didn't do the big matches, injuries happened. At the time, it felt impossible. Ellis Island era AEW, people started to leave or retire or whatever. Now, because you've got this increased pay-per-view schedule, which I never thought in a million years would be a good idea. I thought it would be gross content form stuff. It's actually solved the big problem and the second problem of these gaps between pay-per-views, or the TV's just kind of there, good, but not that important. And now you can't not do the big matches more than you did before because you've got more pay-per-views to sell. It's so weird that the solution to AEW's big problem is WWE's big mistake, big content form stuff, but they're so far completely nailing it.
I just think it's, like, to use Ospreay's promo as an example, sort of thread these two thoughts together, it's so much easier to talk the talk when about every other week you're given the opportunity to walk the walk. Like, Will Ospreay in the old model might inadvertently go a month and a half without that big Will Ospreay match. So the promos just might not resonate as much because you know, because there's all this history of what he's done, but wrestling's about what have you done for me lately?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's ultimately a, like, it's one of them paranoid thoughts that keeps wrestlers going the way they do in such an unrelenting and difficult industry, is that they know that, like, fans can be fickle and fans can move on and the hot new thing is only ever one promo away, basically. Mercedes Moné very, very soon is going to have to, it's probably going to be Dynasty to get people to buy her first match, but very quickly these matches will need to come around for her because there's only so many promos have been told you, the boss, you're the best, the CEO, all that sort of stuff, before you need to back it up in the ring. I have no doubt she will, but that's why it's just as important that the matches are forthcoming. And I think, like, to use, obviously, you know, Punk and Cody, Punk for me was doing a great job at times, making you feel like you absolutely need to see him versus insert rank and file wrestler here. Yeah. That was the genius of a Punk promo. It was like, oh, he's just called out whoever. And I still desperately want to see Punk versus whoever because he's talked it up. And then finally the MJF match would come around, or finally whatever. Ospreay isn't having to do that. Ospreay is getting yet another dream match to talk. There are going to come a point where his job is in these promos is going to be to say, right, now sell me on you versus, like, I don't want to, like, neg a mid-carder here, but you know the type of wrestler I'm talking about where it's
Butcher,
like,
who just showed up.
A perfect example, right? Now sell me on you versus the Butcher. You've got a little bit of history from all these dream matches, but what have you got here? I think he'll do it, by the way. I'm with Sidge. I'm like, Ospreay's in. He's locked in as a weekly TV regular. It's almost as if him not doing it has had him sitting there ready and raring to go, and he's just off to the races. But it's so much more beneficial when you've got all these wrestlers with which to do the dream matches and just keep them coming. Like the Shibata one. It's an inspired thing to have, basically, in a Clash of Eras dream match between Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson. It's just because it's front of mind, because me and Sid have been talking about a lot lately. You're basically running an idea you did with Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels. They did a, you did that, well, I'm going to do it better then. Like, the Shibata of that day was Marty Jannetty, weirdly enough, but like, like Marty Jannetty was back
one
on
one of them's
Raw.
Got a brain in the head and the other one doesn't. Yeah.
Marty Jannetty was back on Raw and Angle's like, right, well, I'm going to have to kick his ass in because you did that, you know. But it's the same principle.
Yeah.
It's an absolute dream match between two of the best of all time.
And it's Marty Jannetty who doesn't have the brain, just to be absolutely,
absolutely clear. And speaking of guys that don't have brain, like, this is a man who had his brain taken out and put in a dishwasher, then put back in his head.
That was the joke.
And Will Ospreay wants to do a Tiger Driver 91 on that head. Like, yeah. Oh my God.
That was the preview spot I was going to talk about.
Oh, sorry.
Never mind. One more thing, very quickly on this. I wrote an article last year called The Disturbing Truth Behind Wrestling Fan Tribalism. And my idea was, the irony is that if you fused the sensibilities of Tony Khan and Paul Levesque, you'd have like one really good booker with flair on one side and just steadfast focus, profile, focus, build, promotion, like position that guy as a top star, versus Khan's energy, flair, verve, detail, imagination. You'd have one really good booker. And now, with the Ospreay, Monet, you get your big matches, and I'm not taking the piss anymore. I think Tony Khan might have borrowed a little bit from Triple H over the past 18 months. Truly, I do.
We get a video.
People will not like that, but I think it's genuinely true.
Mm. A video package highlights the feud between Christian Cage and Adam Copeland to set up the main event. And then, sorry, guys.
Oh, we can't do this. We've got 6 minutes on the big timer. He's got to go home.
That's fine. Yeah, I miss me.
The one women's match on the show is next. It was Tamas Tony Storm and Mariah May versus Gianna Parazzo and Thunder Rosa. They, Parazzo and Rosa, that is, attack before the bell. Rosa sends Storm into the ropes, and they're in there. Luther tries a leg sweep. Rosa jumps out of it, but that allows Storm to get in a cheap shot to take control as we go to break. When we come back, Rosa fights off both May and Storm with a top rope crossbody, gets the hot tag to Deonna, who runs wild with a knee lift and a leg sweep. She big boots Mariah May's head off. Rosa makes the blind tag, though, and Perazzo's not happy. Storm tries to sneak in, but just gets dropped. May gets planted with a Death Valley driver from Thunder Rosa. Storm hits a German suplex in the corner, hits Thunder Rosa with sweet cheap music, but Rosa counters a Storm Zero with a flash roll-up. 1, 2, 3, 3. Thunder Rosa pins the Women's World Champion. Storm can't believe it, and Deonna's not happy either that Rosa swooped in and got the victory.
Good and bad here. Deonna Purrazzo is not going to be disappeared. As virtually every other, you've just lost at the pay-per-view, go away for a bit.
Yes.
Women's title contender. We've seen it with Tay Conti a couple of years ago. It's a ritual.
Yes.
That doesn't seem to be happening. She has a direction. It's the absolute minimum for an episodic TV show for your characters to have directions, but for AEW women's division, that bar's in hell. So maybe it's worth putting over in a sign of maybe they do actually want to improve in the wake of money arriving. I didn't think the action was particularly strong here. Mariah May's spinning, the footwork on that spinning backbreaker is tremendous. She has the most important thing, like a mastery of the crowd, but she did get lost here, mm-hmm. and I think she had to be summoned to the apron to get back into the ring, and things were grinding to a halt. So she's still green, but you think that she's really made a connection with this, with Tony Khan and the audience, so hopefully she'll get more profile. They've kind of signposted the fact that, right, well, Tony Storm is going to beat Thunder Rosa at Dynasty. Dynasty, subsequent to Dynasty, it's going to be Thunder Rosa versus Deonna in a program, whatever. But they are trying to overlap, and I thought this was a resourceful match. The action, now to write home about. I will say that I got, what, a minute of Tony Storm versus Thunder Rosa, because this wasn't just like eaten up by a commercial, this match. It was like Kirby inhaling it. You know what I mean? But Thunder Rosa, who didn't look that great throughout, but she's coming back from injury, so, you know, be a bit kind. She took a snap German like a champ of Tony yeah. Storm. So I'm taking that brief glimpse and I'm going to carry it into the next week or so.
Yeah, I thought the wrestling was quite poor, but I did like the story, and I like
Candice LeRae is superb, of course.
The wrestling was quite poor there as well, but I like the feeling of stories moving forward, as was the case with Candice LeRae. I like this. Oh, well, then she's going to feud with her. She's going to feud with her. She's, because there's such a statement of intent there. Like, you're not allowing characters to just fall into the void. You're not allowing them to go out there and just pretend that they're fine with having zero purpose because they exist to forward somebody else's story or something like that. It was a shame. I didn't like not liking the match. I thought the execution was sloppy. Almost from what Tony Storm was pretty good, but I thought the rest had a bad night, if I'm being honest. Mariah May's worst match so far. Thunder Rosa, I think you do have to extend
yes.
a bit of generosity when somebody's returning from injury, but I thought perhaps...
A really long time as well.
Yeah, ages, like, and a serious injury at that. Perhaps I just thought had, like, another off night, but that's not the first lady, so that's not
She's
ideal.
She's not been very good in AEW.
Sometimes people fall out of
Brutal
form.
Brutal truth.
And, yeah, like, sometimes people do fall out of form and it can come back round again. So I just thought it was a shame that the work wasn't really supporting the booking, because this is how you need to do it. Sometimes it's got to be... If this was a division that had been booked well for ages, I think then you would be saying, ah, oh, it's a bit like run-of-the-mill. But it needs run-of-the-mill for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, so that can at very least become the norm. So I do actually like the fact that all four of these had a direction coming out of it.
Before we move on, before we even get to the name of the game, let's get to the aim of the game, Sige.
The aim of the game is to identify to the hour, minute and second the first time you hear the first note, the first entrance theme for the first woman to appear for the only women's match. We do this in order to put in bold, italicise and underscore how apathetic, obligatory and just token all of this women's division booking is, because it usually falls in that 120, 1 hour 20 to 1 hour 25 range, there or thereabouts. There's one women's match and it's about goddamn time that things end. We play this game, not for fun, but to just... shine that light. And if you're still struggling with the thought process here that AEW have that we try to capture, good news, we've jingleized it. And this is the AEW Creative Inner Sanctum's interpretation of why they feel like they bloody have to put the women on now, even though it doesn't feel like a passion project, right? The jingle is, don't worry, guys, when the women come out to play, the main... I went too fast too early. When the women, don't worry, guys, when the women come out to play, the main event ain't too far away. That's the aim of the game. In the name of the game, which I haven't prepared for, I was going to do a bit about which songs could, you know, rip off. Ooh. As well, this is Ladies Night, and I'm thinking, ooh, what a night.
I don't know what I'm doing, man.
My humiliation ritual. This is going to end soon.
Yeah.
This is going to end soon. I can't keep doing this.
I just had that flashback to the week where you were. Good news, guys. Just really popped me.
Oh, is that when I wasn't here for the outro?
On NXT? Yeah, that was it, yeah.
NXT, wherever you get your podcasts from. Or not.
That's a show.
Thanks, as always, to the Panda Blair himself, Adam Wilton. At Adam Wilton 4 and Jose Palomares at the Ho 11, who always take care of the
data
for this kind of thing. Just for fun this week, obviously, Hamflet wasn't here for the preview. Sige, I can remember, I think you said 120 something.
I've got them written down, mate. Yeah, so that's how happens every, yeah, happens every week.
Descending order. Yeah, I'm never going
to. Yeah, I can't keep doing this with my life.
it's come to an end. You can tell. It like almost, I'd be considering ending it this week.
It's
on
money
of,
and then the match. It's never going to be over. Wilborn, you said, Adam Wilborn, I don't know you from Adam. You said 1 hour, 9 minutes and knee seconds.
You know what that counts as.
I'm done in the middle of talking, that. Pal.
Instead of 1 hour and 9 minutes, yeah. What would if you put
oh, it? 60, nice. No,
sorry.
Piece of 1 hour, piece of fucking 1 hour, 21 minutes and 3 seconds from one. A loser again.
Just for fun, though.
I'll get the button back.
I was 90 seconds off.
Get the button back.
Almost. That would have still counted. 1 hour, 7 minutes and 30 seconds. That was followed by the open challenge from Swerve, which was answered by The Butcher. That was a nice stare. Great to see The Butcher back.
Love The Butcher.
Yeah, love The Butcher here at What Culture. It is a stare down. Strickland headbutts him, charging big boot. He looks to get clobbered by a big lariat, does Swerve, but he just no-sold it and double stomped his head, hit the house call, went up top, Swerve stomp, and then he decided he wasn't done and submitted The Butcher. Excalibur said he wasn't sure, but that might be Swerve's first submission win in AEW. Quick word on the match, because it was mainly about the post-match.
Good to establish that he's got a submission in his arsenal to build some drama at Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
Swerve's got a really good work punch in him. I think you should really emphasize that. Not enough wrestlers do have a good one, and he's great at it, so just do more of that, please. A Butcher appearance in AEW is always welcome. Mm-hmm. The great man. Love the Butcher. Really on the nose of, like, if you can beat a guy that big, he could probably, he could pose a real threat to Samoa Joe. Like, come on, I'm not 8 years old. Like, don't take the piss out of me. Just do the promo. This match existed is a backdrop for the promo. Just do the promo.
I want to praise the intent of the booking, if not particularly the execution, because I get where Sidge is coming from. But I think it was time to go to the old, you know, the Family Guy Manatee's ideas ball thing, where it's like ways in which to get slash keep wrestler over. And I think if you'd have just done the promo or something else, we'd have another week of, I'm not a Fiend Swerve Joe anymore. It was an, I don't
necessarily think. I think you get Takeshita next week. That's how to get him.
Yeah. This was like, I wasn't even a noble failure because it was fine. Mm. But I'm glad they sort of thought, let's actually get him out there. A virtual squash win over someone like the Butcher. Like, I think it needed. I like the idea that they're going to keep looking at Swerve and thinking, right, we can acknowledge that maybe he's fallen a little bit in the last few weeks. Let's do our best to get him back up there because he's about to potentially win a belt at a pay-per-view. Mm. And I like them to think...
The belt.
I like them to think like that about someone.
Love how Hamlet's like appraisal of pro wrestling is. Were they on my telly? That was good.
You're right, Sidge. I'm going to be a bit more critical to this piece of program. Thank you for raising my standards.
So post-match, Swerve gets a mic and said, look, before he met Samoa Joe, he had nothing but respect. But
I was quite bored in places.
He's got, as he's got
the
to know.
It doesn't feel like the week. Having too good
better
a time.
Than it, it's better than WWE.
It is. I say, yeah, you're f***ing miles off, pal.
You need 2 weeks off the Fed, you.
I'm never taking a week off in my goddamn life. I needed.
That's the problem.
I needed about a month off this last year, but I don't need it anymore. It's good again.
It's 2019 WWE made. I didn't see you on
I didn't like it.
A month off that.
We were getting paid for it by then.
Joke.
So what? Doing so well with the swear counter.
Oh well, you said you've got all day, don't you? That's what you said to me when I was when I expressed concerns about how long we've got left on the podcast. Stain. You
Michael,
said
Michael Cedric. You, like Michael Cole.
Got, you said you could be here all afternoon. Well, you're going to be all you're going to be here all afternoon editing, aren't you, mate?
You said it.
I've done 300 goddamn episodes of SmackDown, head.
Hey, hey, listen.
He said he's stopped liking to the point where he's almost hating him. I get that feeling. Every day he's thinking about wrapping a chain around his neck and choking him out, but his chain isn't big enough for Joe's thick neck. Strickland's going to take ever in his path until Joe gives him what he wants. Out comes Samoa Joe to see what to do with someone like Swerve Strickland. Logic should dictate he should ignore him because he beat him at Revolution, of course. But Strickland still believes the impossible is possible. He can box with God. The problem with that belief is that the fans will start believing him and think that they can become champion too. That is until Joe shows up, smashes you in the face and takes everything you have. Joe said what to do with Strickland is give him exactly what he wants. He goes to hit the ring when out comes Don Callis. Big hometown reception for Don there. Huge boos. He brings up how Strickland and Takeshita have the same number of wins.
I like that.
Maybe Takeshita should show Strickland what it's like to lose to the Don Callis family. AEW isn't Swerve's house. It's the Don Callis' family's house. Strickland said if he had more time, he would burn the Don Callis family tree down to a crisp. Accepts and says when he's done with Takeshita, he's coming for Joe. And yeah, we're getting Takeshita versus Strickland next week.
Yeah, I'll preview that when we preview it. Again, interesting that they're giving him Takeshita. One, it's good that they've got the same amount of wins. It adheres to this very quickly disappearing ranking system. Mm. But you, again, if you've got Ospreay coming out and being the guy every single week and you're giving Swerve Takeshita, people are going to draw those comparisons subconsciously mm-hmm. or otherwise.
Or it rules and then you're actually having a good kind of comparison. Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, who is better? You
know,
like
that's the, what I, that's yeah. I mean, is it going to be as good as, I don't know. But we'll see. We'll yeah. see. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Subconsciously, though, people might do this. So it's a bit risky. Joe was fine. This segment was passable. Swerve, I was kind of up and down on here because he stumbled over his lines a bit, mm-hmm. which we talk for a living. It will happen, but you're meant to be world-class on television. We're just on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're not like reading in the BBC. You know, it's been a massive tragedy, right?
Tragic loss of life. That's what Limmy does.
Yeah, there's been a tragic loss of life, and you're... I'm not on the BBC. I can, you know, say things like Toneless Timey Storm or whatever. Like, Swerve stumbles on his words, I would say, once in every two promos. It's kind of a flaw of his. And it gets to the point where there are people who can just do this, bang, 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 world class every single week. And he has to keep up. He's the one who keeps telling me, as much as he's showing, if not more, telling me that it's his title and he's the man. So the standards at that level are supremely demanding, and sometimes he will stumble and it's a bit noticeable. Having said that, he will get the hard part right and captivate me and impress me and do something like really cool. I love the idea of the chain as a prop. Constantly reminds you of his best night. If he has 365 not great, quite good nights, it'll become a problem if he's holding on to it. But for now, I think it's a good visual reminder. Like, I'm the guy because I was the guy at Full Gear. Mm. I think that's clever. And I love it when John Moxley has this like really good way of conveying like the visual of what he's going to do to someone. Like, I'm going to mop up your blood in the ring or something like that. Him saying like, I'm going to choke out that big neck of yours with the prop was really cool. But then he gets an insult and a threat in the exact same breath by saying, I know your neck's a bit too fat, mate. Maybe I won't be able to do that. That's great stuff. I love a threat. I love an insult. And he did both in one sentence. This continues to be B-, when your world title picture with this roster should be A*.
If I'm permitted, I'm going to use WWE, a comparison to WWE, as a negative here.
Oh, what?
I know. Doesn't feel quite right. They might have been a little bit too WWE with the swerve babyface turn. You know that thing when somebody turns face and then the next week, you're like, I'm kind of the nicest guy of all time, actually. The example I always remember, it was Michael Hayes, of all people, when they first turned John Cena babyface, and he was like, right, ease up straight away because people have fallen in love with this guy being a bit of a dickhead. And for you to basically send him out there kissing babies and stopping his own raps instantly, that's going to cool his heat. People are going to boo him in 6 months. He was bang, 100% right about every single thing he said. We're not there with Swerve at all, though the chain is an interesting comparison. But the vibes feel a bit off now that Swerve has almost instantly becoming like a fan of the crowd popping at his lines. Mm. Like he's pandering that way that babyfaces have to.
He did a revolution sit. Now I'm not going to cheat.
Yeah, but I don't know if I even got a problem with it. I'm with Sid. B- is absolutely fair because it should be an A. It's the world title, but
yeah.
I wonder if it's one of the things that just happens sometimes. Like I found it with Seth Rollins as well. Like he's all of a sudden put his like serious voice back on again. It was like people like you being weird, mate.
Yeah.
Like, and you've just dropped that. Like, I think there's an element where, like, Swerve's, like, knocking out killer lines.
You talk about Seth Rollins like it's Bruno Sammartino on the Raw review.
Swerve was saying funny stuff as a heel, but you were pretty scared of him. He was piss funny when they turned up in Nick Wayne's garage.
Sup, turds.
It was terrifying and hilarious, right? And that's the Swerve, be terrifying and be hilarious. I don't think he's terrifying anymore. And I do think that's harming his aura a little bit ahead of this title match. You want him to win. It's a tricky balance to strike. Took Steve Austin years before he said, I quite like the crowd, actually. He spent years going like, well, I don't care what you say. It's like, I think you do, Steve. I think you actually kind of need the support of the crowd too. So it is a really tough one to get right. But I just think at the moment that's maybe harming what was 6 months ago, an edge that made him, that separated him from pretty much everybody. It separated him from MJF.
Yeah.
Pretty much he was like, he's the real guy now. And I think that's maybe a little bit of something that's been lost. I could just pull back on that a bit.
Main event time, the I Quit match for the TNT title, Adam Copeland versus Christian Cage 3. Huge reaction, of course, for both of these guys. Phenomenal. Copeland early on avoids an attack, goes for a spear. Cage just bails to the floor. Copeland goes right after him. They spill into the penalty box. And Copeland gets a Penguins jersey, I think it is. And a Maple Leafs jersey, and they have the hockey fight.
They made it look like there weren't plants, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Cage wins the brawl.
There were plants.
Yeah, to take us to a commercial. When we come back,
the guy, what you doing my shirt, buddy?
Right, what about this?
Copeland sets a ladder bridge up.
Just like maple syrup right down his face. Yeah. No way.
Then he apologized.
Adam Copeland hits a sit-out slam.
I was tucking into my craft dinner. I can't remember any of those.
Copeland put an upside.
I would apologise to Canada, but I'm not going to apologise to Travis today. Kiss my ass, Travis. It was a very good bit. That was a very, very good bit.
Travis rules.
AW1 on Twitter.
Good signs. Good jackets.
Copeland put an open ladder upside down and dropped Cage midsection first.
Yeah.
Understandably, the ref asks if he wants to quit after that, and Cage is like, no. Copeland sets up a table against the barricade, but Cage leapfrogs a spear, poked him in the eye, posted him, busted him open, and then Cage flew off the top rope, cross-bodied Copeland through the table. Back in the ring, Cage set up a ladder between the ropes and hit a slingshot. Copeland is struggling really badly, but doesn't want to quit. Cage missed the frog splash. Copeland put him in a crossface, but Cage goes for his head to break it up. They get to their feet. They both hit spears to get a double down as we head to another break. When we come back, they fought up the ramp to the top of the stage, and Copeland slingshot Cage off the ramp to the floor. Copeland goes through, comes back out, brings out a hockey goal, draped him across it, and then scored a goal, I think. They're stumbling down the ramp. Copeland's not focusing, obviously, on anything else other than Christian Cage. And Nick Wayne's Moan shows up and low blows Copeland with a hockey stick. Cage breaks it over his back, sends him back into the ring, drives the broken hockey stick into his throat. And Copeland couldn't really even respond to say if he quit, but he didn't. Cage let go, went for chairs. Don't like that one, don't like that one. Oh, there's one with wrapped barbed wire around it. I'll take that one. He wanted to concerto him with the barbed wire chair. Thankfully, Copeland moved. They both tried a kill switch onto the chair. They spun out, and Copeland managed to get Cage in a crossface with the broken hockey stick for a great visual. He's choking him out. Nick Wayne and Lucha kill switch show up, and they hold Adam Copeland for Shayna, who slaps him in the face. And then Daddy Magic and Daniel Garcia make the save. Copeland hits an Impaler DDT on kill switch onto the barbed wire chair. They get sent to the floor. Copeland sets up a ladder in the ring and jumps from the ring, from the ladder in the ring, cross-bodying them on the outside, wiping them out. And they get them back in and handcuff them into opposite corners of the ring. Nick Wayne's mom decides that's enough. She leaves. And Christian Cage is alone with Adam Copeland, Daniel Garcia, and Daddy Magic, of course. He hits Cage with a spear, handcuffs him to the corner, goes into the ring, and reintroduces, of course, to Spike. Brings it in, hits him in the cock with it, hits him again. Then there's a weird bit where I presume this was the TV thing of, like, we're going from a Dynamite to Rampage, because they sort of went, back in a sec, and they come back, and he's still like, oh, bloody hell. And Cage still doesn't want to quit despite all that. So Copeland's going to, kill him. He's going to hit him in the head with Spike. And Cage decides at that point to say, I quit. Adam Copeland wins. He regains the TNT title. Confetti pours down. And one final time, Copeland flips off Cage as the fans sing his song. And he celebrates and closes out Dynamite.
Hamlet needs to leave imminently. Yes. So we'll get his thoughts first.
Love this.
Yeah.
This was so lovely. Adam Copeland and Edge, underrated hometown wrestler, because the first time he was in Toronto in a major way,
got booed.
He got booed and inadvertently invented a bizarre world trope that hung around Canada's neck for decades. Like, that wasn't his fault, but it happened. But yeah, like, this reminded me, he had this, like, that really lovely match against Sheamus when he wrapped it up in Toronto. And again, for as gross as this was, I would describe it as lovely. Like, a guy that really, really suits the home comforts of a crowd that love him, and the tropes and the gags, realistically, yeah. Like the like, this is your local town jokes that they were able to incorporate into this perfectly. As does Christian when he's turning on the town, because he did that at WrestleMania in Toronto that time, and he's like, ah, oh, it's great to be back in Toronto. It reminds me exactly why I moved to Florida. Like, so he's great at heating on the crowd as well. So the chemistry was perfect. The violence was, I don't know. Well, I do know how they did it, like, because they're geniuses at this. But I don't know how they managed to keep it comedic for so long and have it end on a please don't impale me with your nail board. Like, that's quite a hard balance to strike, because you're asking people to have fun with it and then buy in the severity of you killing your lifelong best friend, like, in the middle of the ring. The handcuff visual was terrific. Like, that's the stuff where that's Edge switching on the old TLC brain. It's like, how will this look? How will this look on television? How will this feel as a visual if we do this, 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 and this? Right, that's going to be great. How are we going to get there?
Plus slightly brave, considering handcuffs often don't play along.
Yeah, but, like, again, who should feel brave enough with props more than an Adam Copeland when you think of the things that he's done throughout his career? So, again, there's only certain wrestlers that you would trust in that situation. These were two of it. Again, I just, like, we're not probably talking enough because we're just enjoying it. But at some point down the line, we're going to have to consider, right, what were the best ever matches featuring two wrestlers where the average age was over 100, and these have got two candidates? Between this and the pay-per-view match. That became a thing where you're like, oh God, like, that's... There's matches at Heroes of Wrestling that don't have a grand total of an age that this one does.
What was Age in the Cage? Less than this.
Oh, far less than this, yeah. They were both in the... That would be now a WWE main event.
They're in the 40s.
Men in the 40s, you know? Yeah. Like, when Damian Priest wins the belt, if he ever does... It's going to be an Age in the Cage every month, nearly. that's to their immense credit, but it's because, like, not to be the dead man about it, but it still is more what's going on in there than what people do physically, and they've got that for days and days. It's the magic of these two, isn't it? It's weird. It's the you're Back to the Future thing, Sid. It's like, oh, great, Adam Copeland's won the TNT title. Retire. Like, it might not get better than this. This was magic.
This is absolutely magic. I had so much fun with it. It was creative. It was like a tonal masterpiece in terms of how many modes they just seamlessly went through. It was really, really funny. The visual gag of Christian Cage, who's just the best heel. He has absolutely no affectation about being a cool guy who has a catchphrase that you kind of want people to chant along with. He's an inveterate coward who will show ass all of the time. The visual of the women scurrying out of the bathroom because he just wanted to run away was hilarious. The hockey fight felt like the most staged thing, but it was fun. And I'll tell you what as well, you'll know this pain. Nicholas will know this pain. If you follow a sport, you will know this pain. Is there anything more annoying? Getting battered's one thing by a team who's better than you, right? That's really irritating, but you kind of half expect it. Even like getting beat off a team that is you're expected to win. It's really annoying, but like, it's just, you get more. Is there anything more annoying on this planet as a sports fan, a football fan, when you're comfortably 1-0 ahead at home against a team? You're better than him. You're better than them. You're going to win. And then they just get an equalizer.
And it's on you because you didn't make it 2.
Yeah.
And you should have.
It's like, we're drawn against these, and now you've got 20 minutes to try and win. What the hell have we done? Christian Cage is the best against the run of play wrestler ever.
Yeah.
Like, he got his ass kicked all over the building for like 8 minutes, and then he leapfrogs that spear attempt and gets his mates in. It's like, how's this happening? He's so amazing at giving that sense of, like, injustice. How the hell have you done this? You coward, you bastard. It's because he's just so mentally sharp as a professional wrestler. And I'll tell you one thing as well, because Hamlet's covered off, there was some like really committed bumps here for which they deserve all the credit in the world. And I know the point mainly was Christian Cage has spent this entire program low-blowing Edge or low-blowing Daniel Garcia, and that finish was a series of receipts. I still, in my head canon, love the ridiculous leap of wrestling logic of, this man is the leader of the patriarchy, okay? He is the biological father of Daniel Garcia and Killswitch. His corruptive demon seed must be eradicated from the world. Let's spike his bollocks for the good of the youth whose father he all is. It doesn't make any sense, but his testicles need to be punctured because this patriarchy can... He's not their dad, but it was just... I love wrestling when it's this stupid, but this clever at the same time. Copeland's done his elite thing. Everyone has a great night, even if you're a failure. And I'm saying he's a failure, but like, Keith Lee has got All Out 2022. Like, even the people who've had bad runs in this company, underscoring how good this company is at its best, everyone has a great night here. And this was Copeland's great night. Yeah. But we've had the Tony Schiavone or Kevin Kelly?
Yeah, I think...
Either way, I failed.
Tony Schiavone was Copeland. Kevin Kelly was everything else.
Either way, I failed. I'm not getting on the BBC, but I will continue to be here on YouTube, What Culture Wrestling, and wherever you get your podcasts from.
He's back.
Let us know your thoughts on this show in the comments section below or on X at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflet at
Michael Hamflet.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. But for now, this has been the AEW Dynamite Review. My thanks to Hamlet, to Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.